Hello, and welcome to Introducing Me. I'm your host, Sarah. I started this podcast to get to know other people and lifestyles while discovering more about myself. Each episode, I'll give a new guest a chance to discuss their background, culture, interests, or whatever they want to talk about to help increase all of our own worldviews. Today, I would like to introduce you to Dr. Ilya Blinov. He is here to talk about his life. He grew up in Russia, and he recently became a citizen of the United States. So I'm excited to hear the adventures that he has been on. So thank you so much for being here, Ilya. Why don't you go ahead, say hello, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hi, Sarah. Hello, everybody. So as you just said, I'm originally from Russia, but I spent the last 15 and a half years in America. And about a year and a half, I became a citizen. And it was quite a big event in my life. And this past election was the first election I was able to participate in as a citizen. And it was an absolutely fascinating experience. And obviously, this election was nothing but ordinary, if you remember.
Yes, we're friends on Facebook. So I remember seeing how exciting it was for you to be able to vote. So can you talk a little bit about the becoming a U.S. citizen process? From everything I've heard, it's very difficult.
The hardest part is to get a green card. So first I came to America as a participant of a piano competition. So it was just a tourist visa. It was, 2004. And my very first place was Minneapolis, St. Paul, Minnesota. And, from Russia, there is not much of a difference between, say, the US and the moon. So, theoretically, it's somewhere there. But does it affect your life? No, not at all. So when I came to the US to play in that competition, I looked around oh my gosh, people actually live here. So that was my first impression. So I went back, I continued my studies, I finished conservatory, finished postgraduate, and then one of my friends told me, why don't you come and continue, do your master's in America, if you pass your English, we will give you full scholarship. So I spent a year doing that, preparing for my English tests, and this is how it all started. So I did master's degree, then I did a doctorate degree at the University of Michigan. And then after that, it was one of the hardest moments in my life. So just imagine the situation. So I'm receiving my doctorate diploma. Barack Obama, the sitting president at the moment, comes on campus to congratulate the people who graduated. So you're supposed to be super happy. It was one of the worst days in my life because before then, who I was, a doctorate candidate. Good. Now I have a diploma. No job, my visa is expiring, I don't want to go back to Russia, so what am I to do next? So I ended up doing another master's degree, and at the middle, quite a sandwich, master's, doctorate, master's. And then in the middle of that program, I got a job at Susquehanna, and this is where Sarah was one of my students. Everything was wonderful there. First, I was on a working visa, and then they liked me there. They gave me a green card, and that was the hardest part, to get a green card. So I'm incredibly grateful I had a chance to teach at Susquehanna, and this is where I made that super important step towards becoming an American. And then after that, it's just you spend 5 years on a green card. If you don't do anything weird, you don't rob a bank or storm a capital, everything is fine. You get your citizenship. So pretty much that's the story.
Oh, that's super great. And I'm glad, that Susquehanna gave you that opportunity and you were able to get the green card. I think it's funny that your interim plan was just get another degree, go back and get a second master's.
Well, I wanted to stay in the US, and that was the only way I could extend my visa. Just go and continue your school. And then in the middle of that program, I got a job, and both universities were so nice. I was able to complete another master's degree while doing a full-time job, in a different part of the country.
Cool. So have you been back to Russia in I guess, the last 15 years?
Yeah, of course. Of course. Like, I try to go there, like, once a year, twice a year. I mean, BC, before Corona. Now, who knows, right? So, yeah, like, I try to go there. Like, my mom is there. My sister is there. Like, our cat of 18 years, like, passed away a year ago. So, like, I would visit the cat, too. So, yep. Then I'm looking forward to go there again as soon as it's, like, technically possible.
Definitely. I think we're all kind of waiting for the different opportunities. And, of course, you know, having your close family there, I'm sure you can't wait to get back. So what was it like growing up in Russia? Can you speak to just kind of how things were different and what your life was like?
You know, my family is, like, absolutely ordinary, like, nothing special. Mom, dad, I have one sister, she's 4 years younger. Like, we used to fight as kids, now we're best friends. And we always had cats, so, like, Russia is a very cold country, so skiing was a very big part of it, of our upbringing. And I loved doing bicycle riding, so I did it, like, all the time, all, like, half a year when we don't have the snow. So it's really hard to tell. Like, seriously, there is absolutely nothing special. Like, I'm from quite a large city, like 1.5 million. So that is, I guess, quite different if you compare, like, my, like, life in Russia to my life in America, when most of the people live, like, in rural areas. Like, fewer people live in large cities. In Russia, it's exactly the opposite. Most of the people live in huge places. Like, Moscow is about 10% of the entire population of Russia. So.
Yeah. Now, do you like snow? Do you like the cold?
You know, there is no such a thing as bad weather. It's inappropriate clothing. So, yes, it, like, when the cold, like, when cold temperature comes, it takes about 3-4 days to get adjusted. Like, yeah, like, the frost bites your face. But then after that, no, it's all perfectly fine. Like, the worst part actually is, like, late fall or early spring, like, when everything is melting and freezing and, like, the roads get nasty and, like, it's a lot of, like, dirt on the roads. But then when the snow comes, it's, like, it's very beautiful.
Of course, yes. Now, I believe you are out in California now, so snow would be something you really aren't seeing. Are you enjoying that?
Very much. And every time I'm on Skype with my family, I try to be indoors so they don't get mad at me. Because, like, right now in my home city, I believe they have, like, a minus 18 Fahrenheit. It's not normal. It's, like, it's on the colder end. But yeah, it is very different. But yeah, I still think that California, like, yes, technically it's winter, but it's still like 55, 60. Like, for me, it's the summer. And yes, if I want to see snow, like, 3-4 hour drive and you're in the snow.
Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, you know, I've talked with a lot of people from Susquehanna, so it's a very small town here. And, you know, you talked about a couple different places you've been in the States. So what has your experience been like, city living versus small town rural living?
What I absolutely love about small towns in America, and I lived in several, like, my very first university was Bowling Green, Ohio, which is not a big place at all. So what I love about small towns in America, you have everything you need. You have a wonderful library, you have internet, you have all the stores, you have everything. And yes, if you need to go and, like, see, like, a superstar performer, like, yeah, you drive for a couple hours. Like, New York is, what, 3 hours away from Susquehanna? And you're there. And you can even come back the same day if you don't mind, like, arriving at 1 a.m. So, because in Russia, if you live in a small place, you have nothing. Like, absolutely nothing. Like, no medicine. Like, if you want to go shopping, you have to, again, like, to drive super far. Like, internet is extremely spotty. medicine almost non-existent. So like that's why people like tend to go to large cities, like when you can actually live and not survive. So I absolutely love small places in America.
Yeah. Now, what is your day-to-day life now? And I don't know if it has changed because of the pandemic. So can you talk a little about what you're getting up to?
Well, after I moved to California, I started my own piano studio. And obviously when a pandemic hit, I was like, oh my gosh, I am screwed. Like, I'm going to lose everything. Nope. I actually 2020 was a very successful year, both in terms of teaching and in terms of like growing my business. So I have three waiting lists right now. So like one, people who want longer lessons, or they want two lessons per week because they're preparing for competitions. Like two, their siblings who want to join the studio, and three, just people out from the outside, like who like I don't know. And they have like the smallest chance. So when we had to move online, I actually realized I could hire people who would help me. So like, for example, I don't have to spend time working on certain like technical aspects of a piece, like making sure that all the fingering is right, for example, or like all the counting is done. I can like outsource that work to my assistant who might be like in a different part of the country. And they would do that, and when the student comes back to me, I work only on musical parts, like how you shape this phrase, how you work on the dynamics, how, for example, in the development of Beethoven's Pathetique, like the first theme clashes with the second theme, and like how like to present that better. And I feel much freer because I don't have to like do like that very basic work. So like right now I have one assistant who's working for me, and I'm looking for more because people want more and more and more. So in that respect, the pandemic actually helped. Obviously in terms of the performing, like I had to cancel all the performances I had, both like in California, in America and abroad, because you cannot travel. And the earliest I have right now is, I believe, the all. Nothing is in the spring, nothing is in the summer. And all what we do, like we try to use that app that's called Acapella, when we record our parts together and then like put them together on using that app. So yes, that's of course a strange thing. But in terms of the teaching, in terms of the business, it is an extremely exciting part. Like extremely exciting time. Like I am growing a lot, and here in this area there is a huge demand for learning the piano. So I have a very strong studio, and people are really practicing. So that's fantastic.
That's really awesome that you've been able to use the pandemic to, you know, kind of to your advantage, because so much has gone online, to, you know, be able to hire an assistant and grow in different ways and be able to focus a little bit more on, you know, the bigger picture and the musicality of it. Now, when you were starting this studio in California, was like there a reason where you went where you are, or was it just kind of like you knew there was a demand and this is what you wanted to do?
I am in the Silicon Valley, so like that software we're using right now is developed somewhere around here, and I believe one of my students' dads actually working for Zoom. I like don't ask me what exactly like he's doing. So I am working with extremely smart people who understand the value of that kind of education. And they are ready to work really, really hard. Just to give you an example, like several months ago, we just talked about like how to organize practicing better, like considering our goals and considering the repertoire we're working on. So I decided to put together a list, like ideally, like what, like how much time daily a student would need to spend like working on those pieces. I put it together and then I calculated the bottom line, and the bottom line was 3 hours, 15 minutes every day, 12 years old. So I said, like, ideally at the beginning of the email, and I sent that email. Later the same day, I receive a picture of a whiteboard where my list is not just written, there are check marks. Like, that's the level of involvement. And those people show results. Like, those people submit their videos, everything is done like online, to competitions, and like I got one gold medalist and two silver in Seattle Bach competition a couple months ago, and many more are coming. So that's something I really, really appreciate about this area.
Awesome.
Hard people, working with driven people, and being able to choose who I work with.
Now, how did you first get started? Was there any, like, did you have any connections with anyone that you were able to say, like, hey, I've started a studio and this is my goal?
Yeah, absolutely. So first I came here working for a different studio just to, like, get my feet planted and see how things are done. And then gradually I started my own, and for a year it was like half and half. And then eventually I just work for myself, and now like I'm hiring people.
Awesome. Now, what are your hopes for the future with your studio?
Making sure they feel the fire, the students feel the fire of music. Not just like, okay, here is the list of items you have to learn. Like, go, here are 3 hours. No, like, making sure they feel that connection, they feel understanding of the pieces. And when it happens, it is the happiest time for all of us, and they feel it, and they translate it to the world. And this is how, like, I get more and more people, and, like, at this point, I cannot accommodate anymore. Like myself as a teacher, like, it's simply not healthy. Like, I like stopped, I think, in the summer, saying like, no, like I cannot do anymore. And if like I want to increase somebody else's time, who am I going to kick out? Like, who am I going to say no to? And that is actually a very good thing, because I don't hesitate to say during the lesson, like, sir, you didn't practice. Are you sure you want to stay in the studio? Next lesson, everything is learned.
Yeah, I mean, you give that a little bit of a threat and...
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Now, how did your passion for music get started when you were younger?
Oh, it was not like that direct path when you hear something at the age of 5, you fall in love and ever since. No, it was like my own music lessons were a complete accident. Like, the family legend goes that I was on a walk in the park with my grandma, and she saw a flyer of a local school of music saying like, okay, we're accepting new students. And like, she saw, oh, the audition is happening right now and it's right around the corner, let's go. So like, we went there. I don't remember this. Like, I was 5 or 6. Like, I seriously, I don't. I apparently got accepted, like, everything started, and in Russia the system is completely different. It's not just like music lessons once or twice a week. It's like your instrument, it is ensemble playing, it is choir, it is solfège, and a bit of music history. So like all 5 right from the beginning. So and it is quite a bit of work. And like, I was like a normal boy. I wanted to go outside and play with my friends. So I kept begging my parents to quit. Like, can I, like, and they told me like, okay, you complete the full course of study, which was 7 years. So like by the age of 14, like, you finish like your middle school and you complete that. And then you go to high school and it's already like closer to choosing like your life, like your profession. They told me like, okay, you complete that. And then you can forget about that and like do whatever you want. And when it was the time to finish, I was like 13, 14, I realized I didn't want it to start. My parents were the most surprised people when I told them, like, yeah, like I'm gonna go to college for music. Like, what? You begged us to quit, like, for years and years. What happened?
Now, what are all of your degrees in? Like, what are your music specialties?
Piano, 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 piano. Like, everything is for piano performance, and only that second master's, remember, like, master's, doctorate, master's, that second master's was piano slash pedagogy. Because I thought, okay, I gotta try at least something else. Not just, like, piano performance, like playing. So playing and teaching, but I started teaching when I was 17. So, yes, it was 1993. So, in 2 years, it's going to be 30 years since I started teaching. Thanks for the reminder. I didn't know.
You're welcome.
Okay, so 2023 is going to be 30 years since I started teaching, like, for, like, I mean, as a job, like, as a paying job. Not just, like, torturing my sister. Because she also went through all of that. And as an older brother, I was kind of required to help her practice. And it didn't go really well. And now if she wants to make me blush, she would bring those memories back.
Now, is she at all still musical, or did she stop when she hit that magical age?
She stopped. She went to languages. She is a professional interpreter. She speaks 5 languages, and she works for a software company as a technical writer, meaning, like, they write software, and she needs to, like, write, like, user's manuals in different languages.
Cool. Now, you talked a little bit about your experience. You know, you had to learn English because you were going to come to America to study. So what is it like, English versus Russian?
You mean as languages? In English, you always say what you mean. Like, your words and the meaning always go together. In Russian, it's never the case. There are several layers of meaning, and it is quite difficult to manage. I have very good friends, husband and wife. They're both Russians. They live in America. And I noticed a very strange thing. As soon as they start quarreling, they switch to English. Immediately. Because in English, you say what you mean. Like, in Russian, like, wait. Like, what is it you're saying? Like, in English, it doesn't happen. And if it happens, like, you immediately see those, like, that puzzle look, like, on, like, your conversation partner face, like, huh? So that's the biggest difference for me.
Yeah. Now, do you have a lot of people in America who are also Russian that you're able to converse with in Russian?
Obviously, I have friends, like, Russian friends, but I don't hang out with people only because we happen to grow up speaking the same language. No. And in many ways, Russian community in America is not as close and as, say, like, I don't know, people from India or Vietnam or you name it. I don't know why. Like, when I just moved to America and, like, first university, my English was very, very shaky. Like, the conversation would go, like, would you like coffee or tea? Yes. So my English as a second language program teachers said, like, okay, if you want your English to improve, don't hang out with your Russian friends. Like, avoid your mother tongue. Like, English. And it became a habit. But yes, like, I have quite many friends, like, people who we shared the same room again, like, during our first year in America. Like, she's in Illinois right now. I'm here in California. We just chatted yesterday, like, talking about our students.
Yeah, that's very interesting to hear. You know, don't hang out with people in your mother tongue. You know, you've got to fully immerse yourself so exactly. You know what the conversations
exactly.
are.
Exactly. If you want your, like, foreign language to improve, use it every day. Like, use it. Yes, and it really worked. It really worked, and Bowling Green is absolutely amazing. Like, they really helped.
Now, what was it like for you to be able to vote in this past election?
Let's start with 2016. It was very hard not be able to vote back then. Because, like, I couldn't believe the guy who won back then did win. Like, I just, how? Then, like, I did my reading, like, I started understanding things a little bit better. And yes, it was an extremely meaningful experience. Knowing that my vote matters, my vote counts, and I was very happy to see the results, especially witnessing how rocky the whole process was. Definitely January 6th was a major shock. It's like I turned on the TV because, like, it's just okay, it's my first time, I want to see everything. Like, I expected, like, that boring process when, like, they read what they're supposed to read, or, like, they object to what they plan to object to. But I didn't expect what we all witnessed. So let's see how it unfolds. And also, like, in Russia, like, elections are pretty much a decoration. Like, it is just they technically exist, but as Joseph Stalin said, it doesn't matter who votes, it matters who counts the votes. It pretty much continues in the same way. So, like, it doesn't matter how people vote. Like, people who count are going to, like, present the results they are required to present. And it's meaningless.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you were able to experience it, especially after, you had been in America for so long, and to see what had happened to then have an outcome that you were very much looking forward to.
Oh yes, like I watched closely 08, then 2012, then Obama was like my commencement speaker, like when I graduated. Then it was the horror of 2016.
Now, is it better living out in California where you are, in terms of, say, a political divide, because being in Pennsylvania, you would have been in a very important state for the election, whereas California was more likely to lean one way.
That is the next question. Like, I had to explain to my friends in Russia the Electoral College, but I didn't even try to defend it. I think it has to go. I think, yes, I understand why it came to be, like when the whole thing started, like when, like back in substance at the beginning of this country, but now it just has to go. Because yes, my vote here weights less than my vote would have been in Pennsylvania or in Ohio or in Michigan. Yes, because here in California, yes, like it votes only democratic way, and it's not how it's supposed to be. So we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see, what happens. It's different every day, and it's only just now, as we're recording, the end of January, so it should be interesting, as months go by and vaccines come out and
I already have several friends who got vaccinated. Everybody says that the second shot is more painful. Like, I'm not even close in this line, so I hope that my turn will be sometime in the spring. So, we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, anyone who wants to get a shot, like in general, because they are painful, but obviously, like the reason for wanting the shot is the shot itself, not the painful experience of getting poked with a needle.
Is it a lot of snow in Pennsylvania now?
We are forecasted for up to a foot of snow starting tomorrow.
Okay. Like, that was like a shock for me when I moved from Michigan to Pennsylvania. In Michigan, they deliver pizza no matter how much snow there is. like a foot of snow, 2 feet of snow. You go to your Domino's app, like you choose your toppings, and in 20 minutes you have a pizza. In Pennsylvania, nope. Like everything is shut down.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a little bit different. And we can keep all of this in the recording. I think it's important to talk about even just like weather and knowing the differences. I think, you know, we're going to get a lot of snow. We had a lot of snow right before the holidays. And things still do open. But with everything being remote, like we got an email saying, don't come into the office, but still work. So is California, you think, is it going to be the place that you spend the rest of your life, or are you going to continue to move around the country?
So far, I like it a lot here. So again, mostly because I'm privileged to work with extremely smart and extremely motivated people. So like Apple, Google, Facebook, all those big tech companies, like they're really, really wonderful people to work with. So like they like trust me, their kids, and they really make them work. Like they make them practice, they make them do what I say, and the result shows. So that makes a huge difference. Like climate, yes, climate is important. Like, yes, it's very nice to have like what, 340 sunny days per year. So, but it is not the main factor. So most importantly, like pure joy of working with people who are able to invest their energy and their intellect and their talent.
Yeah, that drive I think is so important when you're learning music, and the willingness to continue and focus and all of that.
But life is unpredictable. Like 20 years ago, again, like America and Moon were not that much different for me. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and now like here I am voting in an election.
Yeah, that's definitely different. When you first decided to come to America, was there any like apprehension with your family, or was it, hey, he's going to go basically to the moon and it's okay?
Well, my family is extremely supportive. Again, like when I decided to go to music, it's not what my parents wanted me to do. Like I was quite good in math, in physics, and they wanted me to go and major in that in the university. And they said, like, are you sure you want to do music? Like, are you? I said, yes, I am. I wasn't, like, that sure. But, you know, like, when you're 15, like, yes, I'm sure. They said, like, okay, we'll pay for, like, all your preparation courses for the college. We pay for everything. Like, good luck. I'm extremely grateful. And I think I made the right decision. And it was pretty much the same when I decided to go to America. The hardest part was my auntie. She's an actress and we used to perform together a lot. Like she's an actress, she's a singer. And like, she obviously like, when I became a pianist, she immediately like employed me as her, like her accompanist. So we worked together like for what? Almost 15 years. And we had like a huge repertoire. So like when I moved to America, that was a huge blow for her. I don't think she forgave me completely. But that was the only thing.
And have you ever had any issues being a Russian in America?
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. No. So, and again, obviously like a college campus is not America. And no, and I spent my first, 10 years in America on campus. And people are extremely supportive. People are extremely welcoming. Again, in Bowling Green, I think they still exist. There is an organization called Global Connection. They during the year, they collect household items like mugs, microwaves, dishes, everything. And then at the beginning of the school year, they distribute that between international students. So like people who just come here with nothing. I was so happy, like I got everything I needed, like during my first month in Ohio. And then several weeks later, I was already in a different state. I was in Michigan. I had like friends over, like we were having a cup of tea or something else. And one of them asks like, okay, why does your mug says Terrific Grandpa? I said, like, you know, I didn't even read. I was so happy to have that mug. So it was from the, like, that global connection, you know, give out thing. Yes, like I feel extremely blessed and like privileged, like being here, like as an international student and like gradually making my way towards becoming like an American.
Awesome. Well, I'm glad to hear that it has been smooth, that everything, you know, has been good. You never know. And that's one of the things I love about this podcast is just hearing the different stories from people that have been in different places. Now, is there anything else that you would like to share with the listeners about your story that I might not know and that I wouldn't be able to prompt with a question?
First of all, thank you for inviting me. I really, really miss many, many people in Stevens Grove and many, many people on campus. So it's really good to see like a face from that part of my life. It's been wonderful. So I'm very happy to like reconnect with you and knowing that you are somewhere there, like near that place. I hope my squirrel is still there. Like for the listeners who don't know, my office on campus was on the first floor and I befriended a squirrel who would come to my window like for treats. And like at the end of the semester, students who usually like bring their professors like candy or flowers, like my students would bring for me like nuts for my squirrel. So like that was like a very nice thing, but Susquehanna.
Yes, we do love our squirrels. I don't know if your squirrel is specifically still there, but they're still rummaging the campus, as they always do. Now, with all of my guests, before I close everything out and wrap everything up, I like to ask a random question. So something that's kind of like less life, you know, not as interesting, or maybe still interesting, but I like kind of having something a little bit different at the end. So the question I'm going to ask you is what your favorite kind of movie is. What, you know, when you can go to the movies, what is your choice to go see?
Pixar. I am a huge Pixar fan. If you haven't yet seen Soul, go for it. It's one of the best. So it is like... I feel lucky I live in the same area. Like I went to like see like Pixar's campus, but they unfortunately don't allow any visitors. Like you need to know someone who works there to get in. But I watch every movie they release. Like, and for example, Inside Out, I use when I teach sonata allegro. Because that movie structured like a sonata, like a first movement of a sonata with the exposition, development, and recapitulation. And they are so inventive, they are so creative, and so unpredictable. So that's like number one. I know it doesn't sound very like serious, but why not?
I mean, I'm gonna... get crap from my friends who listen to this because like that is the answer that I would give. Like I have on my wall a Frozen poster, which isn't Pixar, but you know, same parent company.
What are your top three of Pixar?
Oh gosh, that is not a question to ask. Actually, kind of funny story. I decided back when the pandemic started that we were going to watch every single Pixar movie. Not by any like immediate need, mostly chronological. And we're actually at Inside Out, which came out in 2015. So we're in the last haul. I really like Inside Out. And I think most of the later movies, honestly, are kind of in my top range just because I have more like adult memories with them. Like I love the Toy Stories, but I don't know. Up the music at the beginning of Up is great. So I would say those two. I'm not sure if I could immediately give another third because like I really like The Incredibles and like I like Toy Stories. I don't know. What are your top three?
Up, Inside Out, and now I'm torn between Coco and Soul. Now top three is not enough.
Yeah, and I completely forgot about Coco because we haven't gotten there in our list. And that was also a good one. Now, how do you think with Soul specifically, because obviously the main character is a pianist, how did you feel they did representing with Joe?
Well, the whole idea of exploring life and afterlife, what a subject for a cartoon, right? So I was just blown away just by the idea and how they developed that. I was a little bit underwhelmed with the ending. Tell me what happened to 22. Tell me what the main character is going to do. Is he going to perform? Is he going to teach? Or is he going to combine? But I guess maybe they're planning a sequel. That's why they left all the ends loose.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely, I live in the world of theories on YouTube. So there's definitely a lot of theories about what's happened to 22, about what's happened to Joe. I kind of like that they didn't answer those questions, and I don't know if we will get a sequel. Because I think there's a bit of, you know, especially with 22, having that, the personality and the different actions, you know, not knowing and not pigeonholing and saying this is the person they become. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, but you know, what Pixar movie do you think has the best music?
Oh, definitely Coco. Okay. Definitely Coco. Yeah.
Awesome. I appreciate that we just got to have that little bit of excitement here at the end.
Fantastic.
All right, that brings this episode to a close. If you'd like to check out Ilya playing piano, he has a YouTube channel, so I will be making sure to leave that here in the description. And of course, if you would like to connect with the podcast on social media, links are in the description as well. We are on Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, and of course, the podcast email is always there. I'm always looking for new guests and love talking with new people, so feel free to send me an email and we can connect. And of course, we are also on Patreon for monetary support. Of course, podcasting is not free, so any additional help is always very appreciated. And thank you, Ilya, so much for spending time with me today. I've had a great time catching up with you and hearing a little bit more about you. And to my listeners, for taking the time out of your day to hear a new story. Until next week, bye.
And thank you for having me. Goodbye, everybody.